You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan. I love the serious tone, Pelton Cast.
Somber,
somber.
Slightly mixed emotions, but certainly more somber than not somber, as the Seattle Mariners have fallen short in their quest for the first World Series in franchise history, losing Game 7 Monday night in Toronto 4-3 after taking a 3-1 lead into the bottom of the seventh inning, only for George Springer to hit a 3-run home run that proved the difference and extended the Mariners' World Series drought to 49 seasons and counting. With that, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
As we have done for 49 years of Mariners baseball and something like 7 years of Mariners hot takes. Do we know how long that is?
No, we looked it up, but do I remember? No, I don't.
I've always been doing Mariners hot takes. You can look at the Overlook Hotel and in the painting. There I am in the Mariners' first season delivering Mariners hot takes. But we say goodbye to Mariners. You don't get that reference. We say goodbye to Mariners baseball in 2025 without a pennant. I get it to be disappointed that it ended the same as was the other 48. But 2025 was inarguably the best season in Mariners history yet. They got to play more games than 28 other teams across the league. And damn it if they didn't make the most of those games. 15 to close out the Tigers, all the way down to the final strike tonight. Swing, we'll call it. The thought of watching them try to figure it out for at least four more games would have been very, very fun. But this season was for all of us. I mean, like, they had the greatest non-Yankee power hitter in American League history.
Greatest period. He surpassed Aaron Judge. Babe Ruth didn't hit 65 home runs in a season. Roger
Maris. Sure, okay, yes. We will go cumulative. Fair enough.
He's number one.
Okay, the greatest power hitter in American League history. They beat Scooble twice in the LDS. They had the winner of the home run derby, retired a number for the first of two consecutive summers, a first, and won the fucking ALS for the first time in 24 years. But those moments were all for the masses. I was thinking about this take when I expected to be delivering, because I'm not a smart person, this one after the Mariners were off to the World Series. But this season belonged to all of us. Long-term fans like myself, you, and Jimmer. No, but actually, those of us who've been there for all of the ups and downs of the season. Just glancing at the schedule, and I'm kind of getting emotional about thinking about us watching opening night cloud a victory. That Friday night 11-inning slugfest with the Giants. Do you remember that one? The Sunday when we went for your birthday party seeing Robles get hurt at the beginning of the season?
Oof.
When you're at the beginning of the season, every game feels so important at that point. Going to San Diego and sweeping them to take a commanding lead on the Vetter Cup as it was starting to appear Cal was doing something special. Watching on my phone while we were at Wings and Waves somewhere deep in Oregon because I was just desperate for more baseball. The Cole Young walk-off fielder's choice in his debut that you also were at. Ben Williamson's debut, as well as picking up a couple of hits. The swoon in June when we got swept by the Orioles and losses to the Angels. You remember being at that Orioles game, and despite the Cal Jack, we were just like, this is a 500 team at best. The brutal loss to the Yankees in the midst of that sweep and absolutely hating Jazz Chisholm, but blowing it after the gem that Woo threw. I definitely do not remember hearing Rick Riz so disappointed than that game. And then following it up after that with the sweep of the Tigers to close out the first half of the season where the Mariners could not be stopped in the eighth and ninth innings. I remember it was hot as fuck in Seattle that weekend and Luka was playing a tournament in Puyallup and absolutely raking in a 13U tournament. It's funny how the magic of baseball is that it brings you back to what you were doing while listening or watching baseball games that were happening. but then beating Mizorowski 1-0 because of another Caljack. Honestly, one of the most fun Mariners games I've ever been to. Just casually walking throughout the stadium, sitting in a bunch of different seats. Canzone coming on later in the season and walking it off against the White Sox for another sweep. July 30th, do you remember this? Losing to the A's, but trading for Gino mid-game and not caring at all about the outcome. A couple games later, the JP walk-off against the Rangers and the bat flip that he had when that happened. I was laying in bed with children and had to be absolutely quiet when that happened, making no noise. And I just like silently pumped my fist. The run that followed that, and then the deep swoon that succeeded it, going to the East Coast and losing all those games to the Phillies and the Mets when we felt like the season might be dead at that point. The Leo Rivas walk-off homer, followed the next night by the Harry Ford walk-off sack fly. Stressing about playoff odds throughout all of August and hoping for a wild card before they rattled off 17 of 18. And then casually ending the Astros and the absolute desperation we felt around the Wu injury to the second to the last home series with those back-to-back electric nights against the Rockies, clinching the playoffs, and then the AL West with Cal hitting his 60th homer. All the way to how rocking T-Mobile was just a couple weeks ago for its first playoff series as the higher seed in a couple of decades. Jorge hitting two homers off of Skubal. Humpy finally doing it. And the Polo walk-off and Gino and Wu in game five. Those were the moments that defined the season for the Mariners plus so much more. So thanks for listening along with Mariners Hot Takes in 2025, allowing me to talk about the boys of summer. My classic American summer, processing getting older, ennui, getting angry over the decisions of their ex-catcher manager, and also growing to love him, I think. The Gas Brothers and the roster with no holes. I have a feeling that the next one might also lack holes, even if they re-sign Tommy La Stella this offseason. So anyway, this was a season for us. The ones who remember all of those moments and more and lived and died with them along the way. It's a long season, but this one was the absolute most fun of them. One that was rewarding, even in the downtimes, players and situations we'll remember for the rest of our lives. So excuse me if I'm not that down about the outcome tonight, because the real hard part is going to be waiting until the next one, because baseball is the fucking best. And we're the second to last team who has to say this, but there's always next year.
Wow. First off, to fact check you, they only played more than 27 other teams. They are the 28th team and then two are in the World Series. That makes 30.
Sure, fair enough.
This is not necessarily the direction I was expecting you to go with it. I like it. I mean, when we got to the ninth inning and there was the expectation that they could pinch hit for both Leo Rivas, which they did not, and Rivas had decent at bat and a tough strike three, as he did so many times in this game. And someone made a joke about pinch hitting Roddy Tellez. And it's like, man, baseball seasons are so long. There are so many characters that come and go and fade in and out of the roster along the way. And, you know, at one point during the broadcast, it's Joe Davis, right? Who does the play-by-play for this, mentioned that like game seven compresses everything you love about baseball into a small part. And to me, frankly, playoff baseball buries very little relationship to what I actually love about baseball, which is just that it's on all the time, all summer yep. long when it's nice, you know, the best part of the year in Seattle. And then you get to the playoffs and it's 45 degrees and cold and the games are tense and it's a totally different experience than baseball is. Like, for most of the season, baseball is the most casual sport. It's the sport you pay the least attention to. You mentioned going to a game, and your highlight of it was walking around to a bunch of different seats.
Like,
you would never say that about an NFL game. That's the beauty in many ways of baseball, which disappears entirely in the playoffs. And it becomes, what it is still fun in its own right. I mean, my next thought is, I had such a pit in my stomach after the homer, and yet...
The George Springer homer?
Yeah.
No shit. Okay. Yeah.
But like, game six, I wasn't that emotional about, maybe just because of the fact that I knew that there was a tomorrow, that it wasn't do or die for the Mariners. But yeah, that one, I really felt it. But what I want to say is I can't wait to feel that feeling again.
Yeah. The darkness is part of it. It is. This is a more fun place for a Mariners fan. I just
I mean, we spent a lot of time in the other place and we wanted to be here. That's the thing. The whole time, no one was like, hey, isn't this great? The Mariners aren't making the playoffs. Yeah, we had plenty of experience with that. So I'd like to try the other point part. I will say, like, this is gonna sting for a long fucking time.
I just
They
don't.
were nine outs away from the World Series. They've never done it.
I
It's
think
the
that's an
closest they've ever.
essential part of being a Mariners fan and what makes it fun and what defines it. I am like so deeply okay with this. And look, had they gone,
You're a little
also,
too okay with it.
it's, but to me, I was just kind of like the my favorite part about it. I'm like looking through the schedule and I'm like, this was my life throughout this summer, and baseball's in the background of all of it. You know, and that's kind of what you're talking about, how it's like a casual part of what we do, but it's like I'm like living my life, and baseball is there as this point to go and be a reference for. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's special about the sport of baseball. And it takes you through the best part of the year. It literally is just like a capstone of like, here's the only thing it doesn't hit is Christmas, you know? But it's like, here you go. I'm gonna start in the beginning of the best part of the year, and I'm gonna end right at the very end of the best part of the year. And then it's not going to be there. You have to fucking go fend for yourself for a few months and you don't get baseball.
You
So.
get to heat yourself by the stove of the off-season rumors of in this case, by the way, you mentioned that it's going to feel like a long off-season. It might especially feel like an off-season if there's a lockout that extends well into the 2026 campaign, which seems very likely, especially if the Dodgers do go on to win the World Series in
I thought
easy
that was
fashion.
happening next year.
No, it's happening. Isn't it now?
I think it's the next season. I think you're
Okay.
wrong at that. I think it's 2027.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So I think we have a year on that one.
Well, that's good news.
But the that's like the fun part for me. And I kept being like, all playoffs, I kept being like, why don't I care? Why don't I care more about this? You know what I mean? Like, what is it about me that is like so like I remember being so upset about regular season losses. You know what I mean? Like if they would have lost a game in August, and it's like the just getting there, which maybe this is the most Mariners thing possible, but like the just getting there and getting to keep going and getting to experience that to me is like the most fun part. And I think that's what would be true about the World Series as well. I don't know.
I mean, I think this year's World Series, it actually would have been kind of fun because it would have just been, it's all gravy. They did the thing they've never done before. They're playing the Dodgers. There's no nothing but upside here.
But I do think that like needing it to be appointment viewing is what almost like changes it for me. 'Cause like the way that I'm like, you're casually in and out of a baseball game, and I'm like at baseball for a lot of the summer while it's happening, and sort of like, oh, this is happening. And I'm like, I'm gonna tune in for a few innings here or there. It's not a like I'm watching every single pitch type of sport. It's kind of like life is happening and baseball is coming along with me. And I think that's why it's important that the team was good during this time period as well, you know, and that's why it's been really fun these last few seasons. But it does feel like I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because it's a fucking crazy sport, and a team could be good and could just be bad the next year, you know, like
Or
there
the
is not,
inverse is the Blue Jays last
yeah,
year.
tomorrow is not promised in this sport,
Absolutely not.
and so you have to try to
Odds are Cal Raleigh is probably not going to hit 65 home runs next season.
like some players will be worse and some players will be better. Like the reality is it'll probably look more like 2024 than it did 2025. The pitching staff will regress, the hitting will regress, all things will regress. Like it probably will look more like this season might be the outlier, you know, but also that might equal about the same record. You know, the team probably will still be pretty good next year, but I don't know. You can't guarantee it.
No, absolutely not. And that's why you can't take it for granted and have to, enjoy every miserable moment of the playoff run.
I thought it was a
Are we
really
gonna?
fun game. Like I really just, it would have been more fun if they'd won. And I just like I even the second guessing the decision and putting in Bizardo, I'm like it's never a given that any pitcher is going to give up a 3-run homer. And it's also
No.
never a given that any pitcher is not going to give up a 3-run homer. And it's like Bizardo has been good. I didn't feel like it felt a little bit too easy to be like, this failed miserably, which it did, obviously. You know, it cost the Mariners their season, that particular decision. But it feels a little bit outcome based to me to just be like,
Of
this
course,
was
it's
the wrong
totally
decision.
outcome based, but I do think, like, as soon as, again, I should double check this afterwards, but I believe it's Joe Davis who's the play-by-play for these games. As soon as he mentioned, "Hey, why don't they have Munoz warming to face the top of the order in the ninth, in the seventh here?" It seemed obvious that that's what they should have done. Whether it was to maybe start the inning with Spire and have Munoz ready to go if things got in trouble. Bizarro, as terrific as he's been all season, and as little blame as he should be given for what happened tonight, not that I feel like there's a lot of it out there. I think it's at Dan Wilson. Like, all that can be true, what you're saying can be true. And at the same time, Bill Simmons' book on the Red Sox winning the 2004 title, Now I Can Die in Peace, has always been kind of like an emotional touchstone for me about these new fan experiences of advancing deep in the playoffs, going back to when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl for the first time in 2006, not long after the publication of it. One of the things he mentions in there, talking about the Red Sox losing Game 7 in 2003 to the Yankees, the Aaron Boone game, is that ultimately it was a microcosm of the season, that these cracks that were there all year revealed themselves. Well, the Mariners bullpen has been their biggest weakness, at the very least since the trade deadline, but probably all season. It's what they chose not to really address at the trade deadline, in the way that a lot of other teams did at a high cost in favor of bringing back Gino Suarez. And that obviously had some great moments during the playoffs, but tonight, sadly, was not one of them. He
I mean,
also
Gino
got.
also had a hit in this game, like.
And got totally screwed on a 3-2 call that this is
Oh,
the
he
last.
walked. That's like Gino walked on that at bat. I get why he didn't go a little bit more nuts, but like, it is interesting
He can't
how
get
just
thrown out of the game.
exactly like he had to be pretty restrained
He
there
hit the line.
in that one. But it was like, it was a ball. Gino walked
But maybe Dan
and
Wilson should have
calloused.
gotten thrown out of the game.
That is forever going to be my complaint about Dan Wilson. He's literally just not present as a manager. He's
I don't
just
think that
there.
is my number one complaint about Dan Wilson. I think it's more the bunting with JP Crawford
To
with
get to
runners
Leo
on first
Rivas,
and
I think
second.
maybe he forgot that JP wasn't hitting ninth. I don't know. When it was bunting with JP. Also, though, JP laid down a good bunt for what it's worth. Maybe the first time all entirety in history.
I thought there was a chance they might go to third on that one, but it got the job done. Dan Wilson is the biggest weak spot of this Mariners team. If you're going to look for the hole, it's the manager. And he, as we will detail later in this very podcast that we recorded earlier, lived a charmed existence for much of this playoffs with some of his questionable decisions working out. Tonight, they came back to haunt the Mariners. And that's the thing that, if you want to see the darkness during the offseason, that's going to be the darkness for me.
It's not changing, so.
No, nor probably should it change. I mean, I don't think the players would be thrilled if they fired Dan Wilson at this point.
I suppose I agree with you about going to Munoz there, but like Munoz did come up and give up back-to-back hits when he pitched in the eighth.
Yeah, again, it's no guarantee of success. But if you're from a process standpoint, who do you want facing George Springer, Edward Pizarro, or Andrés Muñoz? That's not a question, man. That's like
No, it
not
should
a
have been
legitimate
Munoz.
question.
It should have been Munoz, but I still think you could expect that Bizardo is going to give up a three-run homer.
No, again, I agree with that.
And I don't think you could expect that Munoz is not going to give up a three-run homer. Like there's a
The difference
window of
between those in
outcomes.
terms of win probability is maybe 2%,
But that
not
2% matters a
100%.
lot in game seven of the ALCS.
Exactly.
It feels like it matters a lot more. And that's the annoying part about baseball is like, I mean, that's like obviously I know the Rays coined the term, right? The extra 2%, but like
Yes.
that's the stuff that Dan is not very good at. But I don't know. You know what I mean? Like it is hard to tell from the outside of the unquantifiable things of what Dan is good at. So because the reality is they won the ALDS and they went to the ALCS, like Scott Service never did that. And it's not like the roster is that markedly better necessarily than it has been.
I don't know. I think it is. Cal Raleigh hit 65 home runs.
Yeah, but the pitching's a
Julio.
lot worse. The pitching was a lot worse this year than it was the previous 2 years.
It's somewhat worse. Over the course of the season, I think it was. I mean, in granted, but they were healthy now. Granted that Kirby and Gilbert were probably not as effective in the playoffs as they might have been in a hypothetical 2024 playoff run. But Scott Servais isn't the reason they didn't make a playoff run in 2023, in 2024. Like that wasn't it. The roster just wasn't as good. You think he might have been?
I'm saying that we literally do not like
I
there
think what
is
we know is that
more to
managers don't
managing.
matter that much, and what they
Exactly.
do, the things that they do tangibly do to make a difference, Scott Servais is better at those things than Dan Wilson.
I don't know, I guess is what I'll say, if there are clubhouse reasons that a manager might matter. Does that make sense? Like
I mean,
if
it's
Cal's
also
season happens from having a, I mean, Scott Servais is also a catcher, so like it's a little bit different. But like the, it's we don't know, obviously. Like you can't just assume that it's necessarily going to be exactly the same.
I would have felt more comfortable playing that game with Scott Servais as the manager than Dan Wilson at the end of the day.
I mean, I agree with you on that piece, but I'm just saying throughout the season, there could be some intangible benefits of what Dan Wilson does as a manager.
That's what I'm
And his
saying. I
record has
wouldn't
been very good.
want to fire him. Like that's even though I just want him to fix the things.
He's not
Take
going to
Dan
fix the
Wilson,
things.
but fix the
Dan
things.
is, it was so funny
He's not
this
Pete
weekend.
Carroll. Again, the listeners can't see you raising an eyebrow. It's
No,
not good podcasting.
Dan May at after this. I'm sure he's probably like, fuck, I should have brought in Munoz. You know what I mean? When he hit the three on Homer, I'm sure that he probably thought the same thing that we were thinking, which was, fuck, I should have put in Munoz. See, that's so funny when you're talking about the microcosm piece, which was Julio swinging at that pitch, which granted, Julio gets on, like, I don't know, Cal probably just gets out, Like, we've all seen, we know the weaknesses of all these players. Like, a lot of people have seen the highlights and Julio swinging at that 3-2 slider in the dirt. And I'm just like screaming. And I'm like, it's going to be a slider in the dirt, Julio. But Julio can't help himself, And it's like, what if he helped himself on 2-2? And I was like, he did it. And then 3-2 is like, Julio just, he just can't, he cannot help himself. That pitch is, he gets so excited about that one particular pitch. And every single baseball team across the league knows it. So that to me was where it was like a microcosm of the entire season. It's not even to blame Julio. It's just like we've seen this shit, We have seen that over and over and over again where they were in the lineup. I did think to me, like having Leo Rivas in that moment, I was like, I'd probably rather have Mitch Garver here. But again, like that's, I mean, what you're talking about is like a minuscule, and Mitch Garver probably also strikes out.
Yes, especially against Girardi. I do think it's like there was always that piece in the back of your mind was like, they won't just hold this lead. They can't hold this lead for all of the reasons that we've talked about.
The Mariners?
Yeah,
Oh, I
I mean,
thought they were going to.
I guess that wasn't in your mind at all. We're
No.
very different fans in
You
that
didn't think
regard.
that? I thought they were going to win.
I mean,
I
obviously, I
thought it would be like a
simultaneously thought they were
tense
going
ninth
to win
inning.
and thought that they were going to lose.
Fair enough. I mean, there is a moment where it's like, is this season really riding on fucking Eduardo Bizzardo, which is his name? But like, what did Rivas hit for the season? I mean, he had 90 at bats for the season.
And
What do you
somehow had
more?
one of the most important hits of the entire season. So,
721 OPS. But there, it does feel to me like if you're not trusting Leo Rivas in that, like, this, like, riding the hot bat or whatever, which he wasn't hot. He had a bad postseason in general. He literally had one important hit, basically. So the way that they were just trusting him was a little bit like he was getting on base a little bit. He was walking.
yeah, he was having good at bats. That's where I think tonight was disappointing, is that, at the in his first two at bats, he just was not seeing the ball well.
But like, I just don't think it matters. I don't think it matters at all.
I
Obviously,
guess
like,
the other big thing picture thing I want to say is like we've talked for a long time about Julio Rodriguez being the timeline, and Julio ended up having an amazing season when it was
Julio,
all
that
said and
was
done.
my other takeaway from it. Look, he struck out to end the season. Julio is the timeline. Like, I still think
No,
Julio is
Cal
a
Raleigh is
more,
the timeline.
I think Julio is a more important player than Julio. than Cal is.
I understand why you're saying that, but Cal doing this, and look, Julio's close enough now to his prime. He's going to turn 25 by the time the next season starts. We'll see how the Mariners handle the offseason. This is not going to be an offseason preview pod. We've got plenty of time to discuss their free agents and what they might or might not do, but they have to continue spending. They have to be aggressively going for it because this is the moment. This is what you've been waiting for. And it'll be interesting to see how their prospects sort of play into that because they do have a number of players who next season could be added to the mix midway through, perhaps more impactfully than Cole Young and Ben Williamson ultimately were.
I mean, I guess the timeline thing, maybe even more so than this, like who was the timeline in the 90s? Let me ask you, who was it?
No, Griffey.
But was it?
What do you mean?
Well, okay, outlasting Griffey was A-Rod for another ALCS. Outlasting A-Rod was Edgar for another ALCS. Does that make sense? Like, wasn't Edgar the timeline?
No, because you weren't making the decisions about what to do with the roster based around Edgar.
I mean, they kind of were.
What do you
Right?
mean?
Well, they had like Ichiro for for the 2001 season,
I mean, the
but
point isn't
like,
that if you trade Griffey, I mean, they did make the playoffs the 2 years after they traded Griffey, that you should just like crawl into a shell and rebuild. The point
I
is,
think
you should have been aggressive to try to win while Griffey was the best player in the American League.
I mean, I think they thought they were, but like,
I don't think they were. They traded for Jamie Moyer. They traded for Terry Mulholland at the deadline. They added Jeff Acero in 97. Up until the Randy Johnson trade, I think they were like pretty aggressive in terms of trying to win now. And even the Johnson trade,
They
like,
fucking traded away Jason Varitek and
yeah, they were probably too aggressive trying to win now, quite frankly.
but I'm just saying, I guess there could be multiple timelines. I don't think there has to be one player who is the timeline, but
The
I
timeline can
think,
shift, but at any given point, there is one timeline.
okay, if you ask me on this day, October 20th, 2025, who is the more valuable player by WAR or whatever in the 2026 season, to me, it's Julio.
That's a really interesting question, and I look forward to the debate about it in the Discord.
And I think Julio is, it's going to be more important for him to be good. Like, who, it has to be Julio.
I don't think it has to be Julio. Kelly just might have won MVP this year. I don't know. We'll find out that by down the road.
I think it's underrated how important Julio is to the franchise almost. But
Oh,
and it
you're a
was
fan?
awesome seeing him having such a great game, you know, like him leading off the game and then hitting the homer. It's just when it works for Julio, and he's gonna figure it out. Like I assure you that Julio is very aware of his deficiencies at the plate sometimes and the types of things that he's not good at. And it's like, I'm sure he's gonna be thinking a lot about them and trying to balance keeping doing Julio things while also maybe not striking out on every slider in the dirt.
I think that Julio is always going to retain some of the weaknesses, and that's fine because of the fact that the things he does that are positive more than outweigh those.
But it was fun to watch him play baseball. And all of them, the whole team. Miles Mastroboni, like, I don't know.
Was part of me that really thought Dom Canzone was going to pinch hit and hit a home run there.
Oh yeah, no. I believed. I mean, he had that like just middle fastball 95, and I'm like, Dom, how did you not? I'm like, I'm sure, again, the same thing. Dom Canzone's probably up right now thinking about that pitch
I'm
that he
sure he
missed.
is,
And
yeah.
it's just like that, in the same way that Dan Wilson right now is probably thinking about, fuck, I should have put in Munoz.
Mean, that's
Dom
the
is
thing about
probably
when
thinking of that
you
pitch.
lose by one run. Every player on the team is thinking about something. Josh Naylor is thinking about, did I jump too high?
It does suck, like some of the moments that could have been, you know, like the JP double play, and just like that, or like the Naylor double play that he got. Like, that's the thing about Munoz. It's like Munoz, I'm gonna see what the bat speed was that ball that Naylor caught, but like that was a rocket that he caught.
Yeah, for all our complaints about betting average on balls in play luck, it did turn around a bit over the course of the game in the Mariners' favor.
Yeah, 105 off the bat. You know, like that's What is the expected batting average is 590 on that ball that turns into a double play for them. So honestly, like the stuff off Munoz, it was 105, 98, 105. And you know what the George Springer one was?
108?
99.1.
Huh. Yeah,
Less than almost all of those.
I'll be honest, when he first hit it, I didn't think it was out.
I didn't think so. I don't know if he thought it was out
I
either.
thought it might be a double. I thought it might be off the wall. I did not think it was out. And then it carried. And
It's
it
a
kept
homer in
carrying.
22 out of 30 ballparks. So, I mean,
It was a legit home run, for
and
sure.
again, the
It just
expected batting average
didn't.
on it was 490, but like,
I don't know if it's something about whether it's the fact that I've been away from watching baseball on TV for 2 weeks, or something about Rogers, whatever.
it's that. It's the Rogers Center thing. What I don't know what you're saying, but I guarantee you it's that. It's a really annoying place to play.
But that I just can't judge fly balls off the bat right now, these last two games.
No, it's a the balls carry there in a way that they don't, and their fans go nuts for every fly ball. But I think maybe that's because they hit a lot of home runs. But like it's you know a lot of times you can like usually judge it based upon the fans or something, and it's like every ball. There was a fly out that Gino had earlier where I was like, holy shit, and then it was like a weak fly out. So
Yes.
it is a hard place to tell. Yeah, I mean JP had a ground out at 109, like. It's, I don't know. I thought Munoz was like pretty lucky for the most part
Oh yeah, without
to
question he
not have
was.
given up a run there. So, but I don't know. Again, it all comes down to it's fucking baseball. Sometimes the ball goes to people and sometimes it doesn't. And that's why it's a really hard sport. That's why you don't bet on the sport. That's why it's a really hard sport to predict. That's why home field advantage doesn't matter at all, seemingly, except for the fact that Gino walked on that at bat and didn't get the call. I'm like against robo umps, but I will say that this series made me more open to the idea.
Oh, I look forward to the ABS era.
A robo ump overlords.
I don't, I
Okay.
just, my pet peeve is calling it RoboWump. There's not going to be like a mechanical robot behind home plate that's doing what was the Enrico Palazzo like strike thing. It's,
That would be great.
I mean,
More of that.
that specifically would be great. I feel like it would really be tough in the tense environment of a game seven of the ALCS. I mean, that's the other part of it. Mariners have never played a game seven before in franchise history. Like, they're breaking new
Crazy.
ground.
Yeah, no, game seven is awesome. How
And
about it? It was
I
fun as
will
hell.
say the positive I take from it is like when the Mariners do it, and eventually they will go to the World Series. Over a long enough timeline, all things will happen.
We may die.
I'm not saying I didn't say we were going to be here necessarily.
Okay.
Eventually, the Seattle Mariners will go to the World Series, and it will feel all the sweeter because of moments like this.
Their expected batting average for the game was like a full 100 points higher than the Bears.
Yeah, I think the Toronto was the better team over the course of the series. The other thing, the last thing I want to say is there was a lot of talk about this being the most important game in franchise history. Like, it would have been really important to make the World Series without question. In 1995, they weren't just playing to make the World Series. They were playing to keep the fucking franchise in Seattle. And one of the things that we as Seattle sports fans know as well as just about anyone is you can't win if you're not even in the game. If the team had moved in 1995, there would be no 2025 playoffs. So the 1995 playoffs, ALDS Game 5, that will always be the most important game of franchise history, even if they win the World Series in seven
Wow.
games.
Also, baseball just doesn't matter anywhere near as much now. 30 years has passed and baseball mattered a lot more in 1995.
It mattered more, but I don't know. As much as the NFL is king, and to your point later in the podcast, there were more people at Lumen Field tonight than there were at T-Mobile Park as we make this transition. All the sad people wearing fans wearing Mariners jerseys that they showed on the ESPN broadcast after the final out. Were you watching both?
Was I watching both?
Yeah.
Both games?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. Oh
Okay.
no, I did see that. Yeah, when the I had flipped over
Okay.
when they did show that. You're saying
I.
at Lumen Field. Yeah, no, I was not about to watch the Blue Jays celebrate. Yeah, no, that was the dude who had it on his like giant like screen thing that he was like showing forward for some reason.
It was kind of perplexing, but it worked well for TV purposes.
No, it was beautiful. I think that must have been what it was for.
But none of those people were like, well, sure, the Mariners lost, but hey, the Seahawks are up 14-0.
I mean, it's the Texans on a Monday night. Like, there's a difference between Game 7 of the ALCS and playing fucking CJ Stroud. Like,
but I will say it was very nice to have something to take our mind off it, to immediately just be able to switch the focus to the Seahawks game.
No, again, we've had a lot of this where it's just like, cool, baseball season's over. It is now fully football season. And I guess as we transition, I don't know if I've quite felt that. And it's been a little bit of like, I think the flow of Seahawks games has been really ugly for like three straight weeks. I mean, you didn't get to see that much of the Jacksonville game, did you?
Barely even was paying attention to it. Like, saw the score maybe once or twice a quarter.
They're just and the Bucks game is not. The Bucks game was a beautiful game to be played. Big W. But
well,
like,
well, more on that later.
Haven't people already heard this?
No.
Oh, I thought
this
you
is still
that.
The emergency pod. Well, yes, maybe some people have heard this, but it has not been officially posted.
But this game just like no rhythm to it at all. And you know,
truly
by the
one
time,
of the most disjointed football games we have ever watched, and one of the most bizarre.
I mean, all that I feel like can be taken away from it is the defense is very good. I took almost still no negatives from the offense. The things we know are Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best wide receiver in the NFL. The defense is definitely legit. And I think Mike McDonald is so simultaneously great at his job in some ways and also very frustrating in other ways, which
wow.
is just going to be what true with coaches like this.
What a unique experience to feel as a Seahawks fan.
It is like, and look, if you're signed up for the experience of defensive coach and the defense is great, and then they've turned over the offense to somebody who has figured it out, that is a great place to be. You know, that is a totally fine place to be. But the annoying parts about it, I do think if they go for that fourth down and score on that series, none of the annoying shit that happened after is really even a factor. And at that point, they were basically doubling up the Texans in yards. And I thought it was a good play call it was like third and 16 or something like that. Maybe it was third and 15 to dump it off. I thought it was a good play call. I thought Ken Walker, to me, I view that as like, if I'm Ken Walker, that's who it was, right? Why am I not seeing? Oh, that must have been a run, I guess, technically. Because I'm not seeing any receiving yards for him. But I'm just like, fuck you, coach. Like, I've done so much work to get us within like feet of the first down on the other side of the field, and you're not willing to try to go get 1 yard because of how scared you are. I mean, that play to me, look, they ended up winning the game. The game was probably over at that point either way. But because of that, because of everything that happened, it reinforced my perspective that they should have gone for that fourth down. Because if they do that, they pick up that fourth down, they score there, it's done. Good night. And instead, they didn't, you know, the Texans were never really in the game, but it was the same as the Jaguars game where it was kind of like, can we just like close the door here? And I think Mike McDonald has been very, very, very bad at that. So, and that's why they've lost some of these games at home. And it is going to, unless they get more aggressive in these situations, not even aggressive. It's like when you get to the point that the broadcast is like, you should go for this fourth down, you should go for that fourth down. Unless maybe it's Greg Olsen. But like beyond that, like if Lewis Riddick is like, I'm surprised that it's funny how they like Clint Kubiak came into it. It's like Clint Kubiak, not his choice, but like, I'm sure Clint Kubiak.
No,
been
he was
like,
saying they should be. He should be.
Mike McDonald should
Clint
be giving
Kubiak
a play to Clint. Yes.
Yeah.
But like it is a go situation. And if Lewis Riddick is saying that, that is a go situation. And that, I mean, what, I don't know what it netted them, 28 yards or something.
30.
It was 38 yards. Okay, great. I mean, even the fact like the Texans didn't move the ball after that, and the Seahawks defense played well, but it's more about, just don't let people hang around in the game. And that's by doing that, that's what you do. By not scoring more points, you're letting them hang around.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it was a weird game on so many levels. 4 turnovers for the Seahawks that really
Really? Cooper Kupp had one of them.
I think Cooper Kupp threw an interception. Four turnovers for the Seahawks, which somehow understates the number of turnovers they probably should have had. Two plays where it seemed like they should have had safeties and got zero safeties.
I saw none of that. I heard Steve Vrabel talking about it. We were like driving around looking at Halloween lights, and Steve Vrabel brought that up, and I was like, what? He was like, two safeties that I called. He's like, I've been wrong so much. What the hell do I even know? What happened on these two safeties plays?
Well, the first play, C.J. Stroud was tackled in the end zone, and the officials ruled that he, because he was first contacted, even though he was moving backwards, it therefore is not, because he was first contacted outside the end zone, it therefore is not a safety. And okay. Mike McDonald tried to challenge it, but because it's a forward progress call, it is therefore not a challengeable call. The other happened, Seahawks recover a fumble by C.J. Stroud on a like attempt to pass that went backwards while being hit. Seahawks recover the ball, fumble the ball into Houston's end zone, where it is recovered by the Texans. But because the Seahawks had possession of it for a time, it is not potentially.
We've done that a couple times this year.
So just, yeah, the Cardinals play. Just a lot of very weird plays in this game. At the end of the day, like, the Seahawks ran the ball pretty well. They outgained Houston by a yard per play in this game, despite
it could have been a lot more.
Houston.
There were points in the third quarter, deep in the third quarter, where they were outgained by a lot more.
Yeah.
And I thought the defense played quite well in this one. Every pass was very, very contended. I think the secondary, like what the secondary is doing without Devin Witherspoon and Julian Love, it's like Ty Okada, freaking dog. I love Ty Okada.
Reek Woolen's best game of the season, without question. A couple of passes defensed. Yeah. I mean, I feel good about where the Seahawks are at right now.
They're the best team in the NFC.
I also, you will hear later, I refer to previewing the football games this weekend. There's only football games. The Seahawks are heading into a bye. That's how with it I am on their schedule at the moment.
Maybe they're not the best team in the NFC, but they are the best team in the NFC West.
I mean,
and the only other competitor is the Lions, in my opinion.
They were number one in DVOA. They're probably still going to be number one in DVOA, I would think.
That feels about right. I mean, I think the Lions are legit. The Lions are a legit good team. It is funny just looking across the NFC, and I'm like, I don't think the Eagles are good. I don't think that the Packers are good. I really actually don't even think the Buccaneers are good. I definitely don't think the Niners
Buccaneers
are good.
Buccaneers have a -1 point differential. No one should think the Buccaneers are good.
Yeah, but the difference is everyone thinks the Buccaneers are good.
I mean, at some point, I don't care what other people think.
They've been a little ravaged, but like,
I am a little worried about Sam Darnold's tendency to occasionally make really, really catastrophically bad plays. Like taking the fumble in the end zone as opposed to...
Hearing that one on the radio from Steve Vrabel, he's like, Sam, no! Sam, no! It was great. Honestly, it was like...
Was it similar to the Piper, no!
That's really what it was.
What is this season?
Like, oh no, Sam. Oh no, Sam. Like...
Oh boy.
Sorry, the other best team in the NFC is of course the Cowboys.
Oh.
So I think the Lions are good. I think the Cowboys are good.
I don't know about that Cowboys defense.
I think the Rams are actually probably good. And I might think that the Panthers are good. One of the Panthers or the Bears, although the Bears are still at negative point differential as well. So it's a very strange NFC right now. Like it is an extraordinarily hard to read NFC. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's an extraordinarily hard to read NFL in general, but like right now, I think the Seahawks probably should have as good of odds as anybody to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, the one complicating factor for them is that the NFC West, the top of it, is so crowded.
Yes.
That their odds of winning the division are lower than, you know, some of these 5-2 teams in other divisions.
Well, and also they all have very easy schedules, so they're going to all, like, it's not like, although all of a sudden that Giants for the Niners, like my boy Jackson Dart.
I don't know if you saw the end of that game. I don't know if you saw the fourth quarter of that game.
I love Jackson Dart. It's my favorite quarterback.
Tim Darnold is my favorite quarterback.
at Panthers is one that's kind of like, maybe. Jacoby Brissett's Cardinals, I'm like, maybe, sure. It seems like Jane Daniels will be playing when the Seahawks play them in November. I do think because of the schedules, it really is just going to come down to kind of who wins head-to-head in those games that all the teams play against each other again.
Which is bad news because the Seahawks already have a loss in those head-to-head games. So, yes. I mean, I think it's a little bit like the classic NFC West where, you know, one of these teams is going to win the division and be in prime position for the playoffs, and then the other two are going to have to be going out on the road in the wild card round, and it's going to be a more difficult uphill battle for them.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense then. I guess as far as odds to win the Super Bowl, that should affect them, though, in a way that, I mean, look, the other teams have people to contend with.
The Indianapolis Colts are two games up in a truly, truly atrocious division.
I mean, I don't think their odds should be that good because I'm still skeptical about them, but like.
Plus 92 point differential. Looked pretty good on Sunday.
Fair enough. I don't know. I feel fine about the Seahawks. That's it.
Okay.
I think they're good. I think John Schneider, not that one. Well, look, good news for all John Schneiders, but for being honest.
It was good. 2-0 night for John Schneiders.
John Schneider had a phenomenal offseason. Like, just seeing Leonard Williams, how much he terrorizes defenses, it is. I mean, that is, I don't know whether Pete was pushing him to do that or not, but like, Leonard Williams has been such an incredible trade and extension that they did. Like, all of the D line, it's relentless. It is a relentless defense that the Seahawks team has, and they're still not healthy.
Yeah, I mean,
so and they have the best receiver in the NFL,
and they got him fairly late in the first round. Like, that was going to be my original blue sky post. This I think was the most popular blue sky post in PeltonCast history. I was starting with there needs to be an investigation of how JSN dropped to 20th in the draft, but then I changed it to how Shane Waldron looked at him and decided that he should be a gadget receiver.
Yep, it happens.
Shane Waldron did a lot of good things, the Seahawks OC, and he also did that. So, yeah, I'm glad the Seahawks have. It's the second most important position in football. The most important position in football.
I will say Ryan Grubb also like figured it out with JSN.
No, I'm not saying he didn't. I'm saying, yeah, the Seahawks have a legitimate star on a great contract at the most important second most important position in football, and at the most important position in football, have a guy playing great football on an amazing contract.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to be in.
And Tyler Lockett was released today.
I may have said some inaccurate things about Tyler Lockett and Cooper Kupp.
I mean, I'm not even like Cooper Kupp has not played that well. You know what I mean? Like, the offense has been good, but it's not really largely because of Kupp. But it's literally
done what the Seahawks needed to do as a receiver, as a quarterback, you know, going to need to get in the film room and do some extended study.
JSN is just, he's otherworldly.
You know, actually, Cooper Kupp needs to be up at 6 a.m. throwing passes to the other receivers.
You know, like, I would be kind of fascinated, right? Because DK, he had an okay game this week, but like, DK's had a pretty good season for, where's he at PFF-wise?
What this would look like if the Seahawks had just kept DK? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, or I mean, it's obviously they should have drafted Emeka Buka, but like, PFF DK is 14th right now, and
Torrey Horton didn't end up with a catch tonight, but I still feel good about Torrey Horton long term.
JSN is number 2 by PFF, who I can't even imagine who number 1 is, but it would have been like a pretty deadly combination of receivers having those two together with Darnold. And I mean, that could be why, like, the Geno Smith regression, when people think about Geno Smith, it actually could have been maybe DK Metcalf and Jackson Smith and Jigba can make almost anybody look really good.
Possible.
In the way that, you know, Joe Flacco, I know to your fantasy dismay, can all of a sudden lead the Browns to, or the Bengals to 33 points against the Steelers and, you know, get Ja'Marr Chase to 161 yards and T. Higgins to 96 yards. Like, There could just be some receivers who are able to make quarterbacks look very, very good, and JSN probably is one of those receivers. But
It's exciting.
as long as you're not Jake Browning, and which Sam Darnold isn't, then you're doing something right. Just get him the fucking ball.
Sam Darnold did nothing wrong. On that note, we've got the rest of the podcast coming for you that was recorded earlier as we talked about the everything I missed during the 2 weeks I was in Europe. So,
and then possibly later this week, a preview of Illinois, which we probably should.
Yeah, and the roundup. We got to talk about UW men's basketball, a very impressive
Hello.
Scrimmage against UNLV.
And we're going to do the players to watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lots to
right.
come.
All right. We're back in it. Podcasting is back, baby.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What a shocking pair of outcomes in tonight's game. We definitely
Are we after it?
We're this. Yeah, we're after it.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be emergency pod first, this second, and oh, boy, the emotions we are feeling are strong. They might be positive. They might be negative, but they
honestly,
are strong.
Honestly, you people say you're afraid of Shohei, but I say, this is me being confident, has Shohei ever seen Luke Jackson?
I mean, possibly. I don't
just
I don't,
wait.
Don't really remember the last series of the regular season that well.
So Mookie Betts gets a load of Taylor Saucedo.
Not on the playoff roster.
Doesn't matter. We don't know he's not on the World Series roster.
We don't know that there is a World Series roster is the key thing about when we're recording this podcast. But we also needed, I don't know if anyone's noticed, I've been in Europe the past 2 weeks. Did I miss anything?
I've almost forgotten how to talk.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's how bad it is.
Real tough beat from Mrs. Fantasy Genius that you haven't been able to speak the entire 2 weeks that I've been gone. All right, well, let's start by going through the Mariners experience prior to whatever intense emotions we experienced during Game 7. You have to be done at the top of the hour here so that you can actually go to the Seahawks game?
No, I have work.
Oh, okay.
The Seahawks game doesn't start till 7.
Oh, right, of course. But you have to be down there by 5.
No, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably going to be leaving at 5 and listening on the radio. Which is how intense my feelings about the Mariners are.
All right. I'm putting 20 minutes on the clock. We have 20 minutes to talk about the Mariners here. Everything prior to, again, the intense emotions that we have just discussed. Do you want to start with game 5?
Game 5 was really fun. I want to start with game 2, actually, though, of the
Oh,
American
right, because you attended this as
series.
Well.
So let me just throw this out there. Seattle Mariners fans, Seattleites maybe in general, need to toughen the fuck up.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like there's things that are happening. It's funny because I feel like it's so easy to be confident, but the way that fans get shaken, especially Mariners fans, and I get it. There has been a long time to be shaken as a Mariners fan. But like ticket prices for game 2, the way that they dropped after losing game 1 and the amount of people who are just like, it was great to be here after losing a single playoff game. Was truly shocking to me.
I mean, ticket prices always drop before the game, right?
They dropped quite a bit. There was a lot of doom and gloom. You didn't remember this because you were in Spain or wherever. There was so much doom and gloom.
Was in Seattle leading up to game 2. Was then on a plane during game 2, which I was able to listen to.
Throughout the fan base after that, and I was just like, it's not supposed to be easy. Like, you want to get to the place because it's harder.
I've been complaining about this because the Seattle Times, after the Mariners dropped game 3, and people were like, well, nothing's ever easy for the Mariners. It's like, what the fuck, man? It's the ALCS. We're
Who
not
is
the
it
Dodgers.
Easy for? The Blue Jays haven't been to the World Series since 1993 either.
It's easy for the Dodgers. I grant that. It was
sure.
Remarkably easy for them.
Great. It's easy for the Dodgers. But also, the Dodgers, it wasn't for a long time, too. The Dodgers famously hadn't
for most of
the, World
I mean,
Series.
I mean, this year, yes. I agree that their history is not World Series after World Series.
So it's kind of like the idea that you like want to be at a hard place. It's like I tell this to Luca with children's baseball, where I'm like, if you're playing, if it's easy to do, you're doing it wrong. You're not playing the right competition. Like, there is always competition out there that is harder, and you want to play the best competition, win or lose. And so that's what the Mariners did in 2 games against the Detroit Tigers, which they both won against future Cy Young winner Tarek Skubal.
I mean, he's also past Cy Young winner, but yes, point
Former
taken.
Seattleite, future two-time Cy Young winner, Tarek Skubal, because in the same way that I was like, has Shohei ever seen Taylor Saucedo? Has Tarek Skubal ever gotten the sight of Jorge Polanco, baby?
I mean, he has. He's lost all his games against the Mariners this season, right?
Incredible. And just low-key, like, looking back at all these moments to get us to the place that we're at right now, win or lose, to the place where we feel these emotions, positive or negative. It is all of these, like, little micro moments. I remember there being in 95 a newspaper story by the newspaper that you mentioned earlier that was like Jay Buhner had a play where I think he hit a home run and then made an error in the outfield and then hit a home run again to win a game in Cleveland.
That sounds
remember
about
that?
Right. Yeah.
And I remember the headlining saying,
I believe it was game three.
From hero to goat to hero on that headline. And it was like, that's one of those micro moments that you have. Like that playoff is remembered from the double, obviously. Like that's it. And then maybe the like crying at the end of it, Joey Cora and Alex Rodriguez, but like Mariners legend Alex Rodriguez. Thank
Some
you.
Of us remember Bullet Bob Wolcott starting game one, although I had forgotten because I did ask if the Mariners won game one of the ALCS. Have they ever led an ALCS before? Which the answer was yes.
Have they ever led an ALCS? Oh, like led the series.
Yes. Not led a game where they did that.
But it was fun to have those moments along the way. You know what I mean? There's like, that is the Jay Buhner game of that ALCS and game two. And then interestingly after also were Jorge Polanco games. And so Polo going yard two times against Skubal. It was one of those moments where it's like, I think doing stuff, the most fun ways to be a sports fan for things to happen as a sports fan are a team being unexpectedly good. And also finding yourself in unexpected situations. And so like for game two, I'm going down there to the Seahawks game against the Buccaneers, which we'll talk about in a second. And I literally, somebody had posted on the Discord, I think that they had tickets available. And I was like, I'm on the fucking train to go down there. I'm like, the tickets aren't that expensive. I just have to go to the Mariners game. Right. I've already done the hard part.
I mean, this was someone selling them for face value, by the way, because of the fact that they were doing it for friends, not because of the fact that they were down on the Mariners.
I know. No, I'm not even saying that. But it was sort of like that's what prompted me to start thinking about it.
Gotcha.
And that wasn't complaining about that. But that was like, I got there and I was like, Chris is going to be game because that's the kind of friend that Chris is.
See, the way you said this in the Discord, I thought that Chris had gotten the tickets and you had gone with him. I didn't realize it was the other way around.
No, literally we got there and I was like, we gotta go, right? And we didn't get them from the person on the Discord. We bought them off a third party like ticket app something because it was just like way cheaper there.
Gotcha.
But literally I was like, Chris, we gotta go to the game, right? And he's like, hell yeah, I'm down. And I'm like, that is the kind of friend you need in your life. You need a hell yeah, I'm down kind of friend, right? And so literally like as the Seahawks game is going on, we're talking about it and I'm like, yes or no. And then I was like, well, I kind of have it scheduled perfectly where the only game I go to is going to be game five. The Mariners are going to walk off, win the series. It's going to be great. Humpy's going to win the salmon run. But then I was like, fuck it. We're here. We've done this. And then at one point, Chris was like, I already told my work I'm not coming in tomorrow. So we have to go. And I was like, that also is the kind of friend that you need in your life. It's somebody who's just going to be like, I already told my work that I am not going to be there. So we buy tickets like halfway through that game. Honestly, the second we did that, the magnitude of the Seahawks game like dropped from small to minute. You know, it was sort of like it was an appetizer for the Mariners playoff game. The energy was great. Winning that game was awesome. It was really sunny out, which is kind of hard to imagine now, even 2 weeks later, just like how it's really become fall in Seattle. The Polo home runs were great. Like the ball down the left field line that Julio hit, how much it mirrored the double. It really felt like there's something happening here, and that sent them back to Detroit, obviously, that win, and then the big blowout win in game three that they had, and it was like, cool, we're doing this in four. But don't tell your friends at the Seattle Times, because it's never easy in baseball. Obviously, the Mariners get blown out in game four, a game that they led early, where I was like, I was literally just looking for ALCS tickets at that point. I was just like, we're going, it's going to be easy. I was like, we're just going to go see Mariners Yankees in the ALCS. Because I was so convinced in that very moment that not only were the Mariners going to win game four and there would not be a game five, but also that the Yankees, who just won game three, were going to come back and beat the Blue Jays, and life comes at you fast.
Okay, so this brings up one of my favorite movie lines to cite, which is from Kill Bill Volume 1, where Lucy Liu says to Uma Thurman's character, like, "You didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you?" And Uma Thurman's character is like, "Actually, for a second there, I did. And that was you."
Oh yeah. No, you always have the thought. Also, I have to say, shout out to Neil from the Discord, sitting literally right behind Chris and I at the game. Like, we're talking 47,000 people there. And statisticians could tell us this, better ones than you, like what the chances are that two people would randomly be seated next to each other for this game who happen to be in the same Discord. But I feel like it has to be quite small.
Yeah, I think even is compared to the birthday problem, this is a considerably less likely situation.
So that also helped. It felt like a moment in the city of Seattle winning that game. And I was like, cool, we've got this. Obviously, game five rolls around. It's Scooble. And I just went into the game. Confident isn't the right word,
Well, you should
but
describe kind of the overall what you were trying to do with game five here, which is to
what do you
not
mean?
attend Huskies Rutgers by bringing Luka.
What do you
Right.
mean?
I don't know. It was explained to me. I don't know if I've talked to you about it directly, that it was like the legacy of we were at 1995
Oh,
game five.
yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
And you
I
want
don't
to,
know.
Luka is the same age now that I was in 95.
That's kind of insane.
It is, yes.
But I was like, that was part of kind of my thinking, where it's like, when you have a child, you have to just go to these moments. You know what I mean? Even if even if it's expensive, even if
You
it's hard,
did forget how to talk.
like it's a thing that you kind of have to do, and having that those two moments mirror each other. But I mean, that's why I bought game five to begin with when Mariners playoff tickets went on sale. But even if I hadn't, I was like, we are going to find ourselves at this game no matter what. You know, like, we are going to be at that game. And the most fun thing about it was like leaving the Seahawks game. I will say, what an incredible shit show it was, because you're talking like, what is it, 67,000? I was actually trying to estimate the amount of people who are doing
The
both.
double.
My guess was it's like 10,000 people. Maybe that's too high.
I think that seems reasonable.
It seemed like almost everyone, but the amount of people who are in one corridor between those two games, because the timing literally was like the Seahawks ended and we went into the Mariners, and there wasn't time in between. Basically, like, we walked in, we had like 15 minutes or something to like charge our phones before the Mariners were starting. So it was pretty fast. But when there are game fives like that, and you're hosting in Seattle and important games like that, like, I don't know, it felt like, to me, like it was an important moment to be at. And watching on TV is one thing, but witnessing it live is a completely different thing. And that energy that you feel when you're at the stadium, like, literally, people, our cousin, did you know this?
Yes, mom told me this.
I just, like, somebody tapped me on the shoulder and was like, hey, stranger, or whatever. It's like, long time no see. And literally, our cousin, who we hadn't seen in years, saw her for the first time, like, second time after your wedding, right after that. And they helped us get into the game. But also, there's just tons of people around. Like, you're looking around and you're like, wow, it is crazy how many people I know. Same thing happened in game five. One of Luka's baseball teammates, his whole family just popped up and they were like, hey, let's go in together. And there's just a lot of energy surrounding it. You know, like, the whole city feels like it's there. And I think that's one of the fun moments about it. I remember going to Sonic's playoff games, and that was kind of how it felt too, where you're just like, this feels like a moment that I have to
Oh
be at.
yeah, and energy. It felt very similar being in my hotel room falling asleep before the Mariners game five started.
The other thing that I felt was, I was like, people are amped the fuck up at this game. And the other thing that I said to Luka was, because the people in front of us kept standing at completely random times, and he was getting like a little bit annoyed about it. And I was like, at some point, it just becomes a baseball game. And that was my takeaway in game two, which is like, the energy that the fans have is a lot, but like, you do settle in at some point, and it's kind of just like, this is a baseball game. And that's what happened in this one too. You know, despite the efforts of, people were excited the whole time, but just as it keeps going on, it's just, that's what a baseball game is. You know, that's like the
But
pacing of it, and it gets
it's not
tenser as
what
it
a
goes on.
baseball game is anymore because there's the base runner at second base in the regular
Well,
season.
an extra innings game in particular, but I'm even saying like a regulation, like 9-inning game. Like, by the time you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, it's kind of like the energy of the very beginning has ended. Like, every out feels a little bit less in extreme magnitude. And then when something good happens, you are up, but you do settle into it. You can't
Yes.
maintain that kind of energy the whole time. It's true with almost all sports. Like, the
With
but then
life.
you do need to bring it back. And for the Mariners, Obviously, like there were moments that it felt very bleak in ALDS Game 5. And there were a few moments where I was like, fuck, we're just gonna lose this. You know, like that's when they went down on the Carpenter homer, and it's like, I don't even feel this way about Vlad Guerrero right now. Cary Carpenter felt invincible. He
Yes.
felt un-get outable in that game. He wasn't. He did get out later in the game, but like the performance that he put together in that game five in particular, it was like, I mean, I knew who Cary Carpenter was, but it definitely was one of those like, I wasn't familiar with your game type moments. Just how dominating he was. He hits that homer, and then I am going crazy. I will tell you, I am losing my fucking mind about Mitch Garver is up. They're doing the pitching change from Skubal because Garver started. They put in Dom Canzone to pitch hit. I'm like, they're gonna go to a lefty. I don't know how Dan should have played this differently, but then they pitch hit for Canzone.
The answer was to pinch hit Luke Rayleigh, who you wouldn't have minded burning in that situation.
I mean, I don't know if they would have. I and this also is before like
Well,
Canzone has struggled in the ALCS.
Luke Rayleigh has more extreme left-right splits than Canzone does.
I was convinced in that moment that Dan Wilson cost the Mariners the ALDS. Another one of those moments where I was like, there is no doubt in my mind that because he blew Dom Canzone on this, that Dan Wilson just cost the Mariners the ALCS. I almost took a photo of myself sitting there sullen while Leo Rivas was at bat. And
I
then you
think
know what happened next?
that would have been a terrific meme had you done
Darkness was seen, I will tell you.
it.
So I'm sitting there just like literally I put my hood on and I'm sitting down, everybody else is standing, and I'm the only person in the building upset about Leo Rivas being at bat. He obviously gets the hit, they tie the game, the Mariners come back. I mean, some gutsy performances pitching wise throughout the game. It was just one of those games where it's like I never felt that scared, even though I probably should have at various times. It just felt like the Mariners were going to do it eventually. But I remember feeling that when they were playing the Astros and they lost to the Astros in the 2022 play 2023 2022
2022.
playoffs. When they lost that game, I distinctly remember sitting there every single inning and being like, they're going to walk it off. They're going to walk it off. They're going to walk it off. So that's how I live my life as an optimist, basically, is thinking that it is going to happen every single inning. And then they loaded them up. I will say I was excited about the Polanco hit, but I'd already just been like, the game's over.
With the bases loaded?
Bases loaded, nobody was out. Or
Are
no, there
you?
was one out. There was one out, right?
Yeah, I mean, even
That is
nobody
the
out. Well,
faith that I have with Jorge Polanco. For Jorge Polanco, where I was like, Polanco's at the plate, it's done.
you chalked it up
What?
as a W. We'll talk about a Noble Tiger situation in a second here. What was Humpy's win like
That,
in the stadium?
because you kind of are like, I feel like this is might happen at some point. I thought they might have done it. Like game two, every game you're kind of like, Humpy might do it.
How aware were you of this Humpy thing? Because I gotta admit, I having only attended two games this season and missing the Salmon run on one of them, I was not really
Do I have to go
plugged
get my
into
Humpy plush from upstairs?
it.
How aware am I of Humpy?
I mean, no, because we only have 4.5 minutes left in this segment, but
I don't want
I would
to.
respect it.
We literally got the Humpy plush from Marco at the Colorado game that we were at, where the Mariners clinched the AL West. Humpy is, it's one of those things where you're like, I hate when advertising works on me. You know, but it was one of those. I'm like, respect. The Mariners did it.
It was
Even
because
down
of
to
the
the
fact that it
name, the
was.
salmon run, like, and it's a
Oh, yeah.
run. I'm like, oh, they fucking nailed it.
Yeah, but also it's like it wasn't like they tried to like take someone else's thing and do it exactly. They put a Seattle spin on something,
Yeah, no,
which is
they did a
something that
beautiful
the
job.
University of Washington marketing department, athletics marketing
So
department has
bad.
never figured out.
So bad. I was telling Luca, I was like, call NFL or professional sports franchises, not NFL teams. Sorry, I take that back. Baseball is good at this. Basketball is pretty good at this. Hockey is good at this. NFL is just too big. It is too big to,
Doesn't need it.
but like college football in particular, the thing of where he was looking at a list of like top 10 traditions, and it's like Mr. Brightside at Michigan. I'm like, motherfucker, how long has that been happening? Like 4 years? Get the fuck out of here with greatest traditions.
It's been happening at least for 5 years because it happened when I was there in 2021. That's when the Huskies decided to appropriate
a rock band from Las Vegas, Nevada puts out a popular rock song in like 2004 or something that people happen to sing at your stupid stadium. Good fucking luck. In Seattle, you have Purple Haze on a team. We have the most famous artist, maybe the second most famous artist from Seattle, Washington. Biggest song has the word purple in it, and you motherfuckers can't get this right.
I mean, they
do a fucking dance remix like Louie Louie. Fine.
It's Purple Rain that they've played after the big wins when teams.
Purple Rain is okay because, but like, I'm okay with that because at least they mentioned purple. But the like tradition of you just play a song, get the fuck out of here. That is not a tradition.
Okay, we don't have time to lose on this. I want to talk about ALCS game five.
Okay, so Jorge Polanco comes up with a hit. I'm like, it's perfect. It is a perfect moment, and he is the perfect hero to have in that very moment. It was well-pitched across the board. It really felt like, I was thinking this before the ALCS, I was like, the Mariners kind of did in the series what we kept saying that they could do in a playoff series.
I mean, I don't know, the starting pitching really didn't, but the depth of the hitting?
No, I think the pitching, like Kirby went out there two times, like Castillo and Kirby went out there and they just shut down the Tigers for a ton of innings in those games. And they managed to beat Scooble because of their pitching, you know, and the hitters chipped away, chipped away, chipped away. And that's where in that moment I was like, they kind of did the thing that people like the Seattle Times or whatever, who don't know that the team actually sucks at pitching and is good at hitting, thought that they were capable of doing in a playoffs.
And then in Toronto, it was not that at all.
The Humpy win, though. The Humpy win in game three of the ALCS. A mockery of the Salmon Run.
We all agree. It was, they tried too hard on that one. They could not bring it back the exact next game. And they were cursed because of it. But I do want to talk about the end of ALCS game five, because that game started at midnight Central European Standard Time. We were in Barcelona by that point, as the last leg of our journey. And like, it's like, is this too late for me to stay up the entire time of, but managed to like, tried to go to sleep at one point, couldn't fall asleep, obviously, because the Mariners were playing. And then picked up games cast just in time to see that the win probability had flipped to the Mariners' favor and realized that that meant Cal Dumper had homered Lidia off the bottom of the eighth. And then obviously was locked in the rest of the inning. And I was so convinced it was going to be a Noble Tigers situation when they had the bases.
Really?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like they were going to strike out, double play. You saw game six. We had such emotions that have been replaced by our game seven emotions, but there were emotions felt last night. But then to see the fly ball on GameCast going out, and I'm like, okay, sacrifice fly, did the thing. And then it keeps going and it keeps going. And it legitimately was like watching a home run for me, just tracing the fly ball.
That's
the
awesome.
GameCast.
I was just so excited for Gino to have that moment. And that was one of the things where I was like, Gino must feel great in the way that after game one, I was like, I'm just really excited for Bryce Miller. And For Gino to have that moment with that clubhouse and to have legitimately, we'll see, you know, knowing where we're at now, one of the most important moments in Mariners history. It's like kind of the rest of the series be damned. We don't need to be like, oh, you know, Gino, like X player didn't do it in this situation or whatever. It's like Gino has a moment now. Gino has one of the greatest moments in Mariners history. It really solidified him as one of the greatest Mariners of all time.
Why don't they make the whole series out of game fives? All right.
We just tried to get through so much.
You want to do Seahawks next or Husky football?
Let's do Husky football.
10 minutes on the clock. Go. We've got three Literally games to talk about here.
The only person in the entire city of Seattle who sat at the Mariners game devastated about the first half of Huskies versus Rutgers football. I had to go to the Mariners game, and I cared more about the Mariners game by being like locked in there. Look, it was the right decision. But I am looking at the fucking GameCast on my phone going insane. After this huge victory against Maryland, I was devastated about how the Huskies were playing. But then it was like one of the greatest quarterback performances in Husky football history. By the end, it just took a second. And That was kind of the moral of the Maryland game and the Rutgers game, and not the Michigan game of the
Which
three games
it
that we're
did
talking about.
take a while. It just didn't take a while for the Huskies. It took a while for Michigan's defense or Michigan's offense, I guess, in that case. Yeah.
I will give Michigan no credit, thank you. But
Wow. No credit.
that Bryce Underwood made one good play. He made one throw. It's fine.
He did move the ball pretty consistently.
Also, I think it should be worth mentioning about the Mariners that they are the farthest they've ever been, and they're without their best pitcher.
Well, he did pitch at one point in this series.
They
Fun
have
fact.
mostly been without their best pitcher.
And also, imagine the feelings we felt about Brian Wu's appearance out of the bullpen in Game 7 earlier. This is
I
classic
was.
Tristan, though, to spend some of the Husky football time on Mariners.
Well, I wanted to spend some of the Mariners' time talking about Husky football because I was devastated. And I will say, like, Luca was talking about how it feels like everybody's a Mariners fan. And I was like, more people are going to the Husky game today. And like, we were on the train going down, and it was tons of Husky fans, and it felt good. It was kind of like, we're all here together, you know? It was one of those because I wore like, we were going to go to the Husky game after the Mariners game had it not gone 15 innings.
Had
That
there
was the
been
plan.
a Mariners game, a Husky football game after the Mariners game, which there wasn't?
No, it's incredible that it happened twice also, that you could like start the Mariners game, have an entire Husky football game, which college football games are not short, and then have that last longer than the football game. That happened both times the Mariners have made the playoffs in the 2020s is incredible. But I was very concerned about losing that game to Rutgers. And it wasn't super wet, but I was just like, what is going on? And then by the end, I mean, I literally just watched it on my Gamecast, just the performance that DeMond had. And it's one of those things where, like, the 400 passing yards, the 100 rushing yards. Yeah, it's Rutgers. But then also, I'm like, well, other people play against Rutgers. It's not
Sure.
like every quarterback does this. And all of those quarterbacks in Husky history, I think that aren't Marcus Tuiasosobo, did he ever do that?
No, he had the 300, 200, but it was the first 400, 100. And I mean, there's not
Bullshit.
been that many in Big Ten history. I mean, it's
All
16, I think, in
quarterbacks
FBS history,
in
right?
FBS
7, 16 or
history
17.
have played teams as bad as Rutgers. So for DeMond
Actually, considerably worse than Rutgers in most
to have
cases.
done that, I mean, they definitely kept their foot on the pedal, maybe like a little bit more toward the end. But for DeMond to have done that, it is legitimately like take nothing away because of who it happened against.
All right. Well, I will say maybe not that many worse than the Rutgers defense because they're 134 in FPI efficiency
Still.
defensively.
I mean, part of that is because of what DeMond did to them.
It's true. And
So,
part of it
but
is due to what the Huskies didn't do against Michigan.
the Maryland game before then, I wanted to do an emergency pod after, and I told you I have never like the Mariners lost later that night after that Husky game, and I was just like, I could care less, which I understand people don't have the same priorities as me, but I was fucking floating after that Maryland win. To be down the way that they were down at Maryland, and then to have just fought back because it's one of those games. It's like the Seahawks used to play where they would get down, and it reminds me of the not the NFC Championship game, the NFC Division game against the Panthers, where it's like just give me a little bit more, right? We keep dominating at this point, and the Huskies got it. And then also looking back at some of those moments, I mean, you were watching this game, right?
Yeah, I saw the entire game. I was here for that.
The running into the punter that could have been a roughing. Where I was like, there's so many little like micro moments to be like, thank God that happened. You know, like if that had gone differently, the entire game could have gone differently to point two. But the Huskies ended up like, it was such a brilliant performance by DeMond in the second half. And he was so untouchable. And the deep balls looked perfect. The first half was truly like, who am I watching against Maryland? I was concerned that DeMond, that Ohio State had broken DeMond for good. After that first half, it just didn't really make sense. But then when he settled in to have the Rutgers game, and then even Michigan, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's a hard place to play. Like that's same as I don't know what the Seattle Times wants to say, but like, it's not supposed to be easy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a harder place to play than Oregon, Autzen Stadium, or, you know.
I mean, they have 78,000 more fans.
Yes, it is a much louder place to play, but I'm saying the combination of
It's much harder
Oregon's
to play than the
defense.
2,000 strong at Oregon. Get the fuck out of here.
I mean, he also played at Penn State. You yourself, again, repeatedly highlighted the meaning of that when we've been talking about this season. So I don't know if I'm willing to go that far. I do think, like, look, Damond Williams Jr. probably isn't the greatest passer and player in college football history.
Hold on, hold on. Yet.
He is still 14th in the country in QBR. It's odd how sort of bifurcated the performances have been in terms of it's and I would include Maryland from half to half. It's either been elite or really poor for the UW offense with not a whole lot of in between. You know, not a whole lot of just like, yeah, they're doing okay. They're punting every four possessions or so. It's either they score every single possession for a stretch or they don't score at all. I did. So my experience on that one, we were flying from Barcelona, London on Saturday night. And then right before takeoff, they come on and say, there is no Wi-Fi on this flight. And I'm like, what? Because I had planned to like follow the entire game on Wi-Fi. You know, I had watched this, followed the Seahawks game that way last year on leg one of our flight home. And it was actually like kind of awesome because you're not distracted by anything else. You're just paying attention to the game cast. And then instead, like basically we took off around halftime. So I had seen the Huskies driving, didn't know that they had scored the touchdown, but assumed that they would score the touchdown to tie the game, would have the ball first to start the second half, and then land at Heathrow and turn on my phone and it's 24/7 Michigan. So that was a
Ugh.
bummer. So.
I don't know. The pace, there were a lot of injuries. Jed has to figure out how to get DeMont. They need to figure out another pace. Because I think the one thing you can look at between the two games, or the all of the games, you're talking about the bifurcated nature of it. Rushing yards for DeMont, 68, 64, 88, negative 28, 54, 136, negative 19. And granted, those are probably the two hardest defenses that they've played also. So it's going to be worse, but like there
The
has to
Maryland
be an
defense
in between.
actually is much better than Michigan's defense.
And he played a pretty good game. I felt like Maryland's defense played quite well in that one, and they did a pretty good job of handling DeMond. I just don't think DeMond played a bad game against Michigan. Like
Yeah.
honestly, I don't think they played a bad game at all. I think that you can look at it almost like drive by drive, and they just I'm the biggest Jed supporter that there is. Jed's teams are not well coached. Like this particular the two particular Jed teams that we have seen are like very, very bad at the small stuff. And
Consistently, yeah.
they had a bunch of really stupid fucking errors. And these like false starts, the Gary and Hatchett false start on the first drive killed them. They just can't come back from it. Even like the field goal, I think they had to kick it because it was 3rd and 9, but Grady Gross missing that field goal was just like when you hit a 48-yard pass against Michigan, you have to score and you have to score touchdowns. The other punt after that, there was like even these false starts, two false starts on that series, and it's just like 10 yards, boom, gone. With the way that they were trying to run this game, they can't have those small mistakes. And then the series coming out of the half, like 2-yard run, incompletion, incompletion, boom. And kind of the game is sort of over at that point. Jed also just, I think Jed thinks like, and Jonah wasn't having like an amazing game or anything in this one. 16 carries is probably the most that he's had all year, I would guess. Jed thinks like I think when I play college football, which he's just like, we gotta go score and we gotta go score fast. He wants to push it in a way that sometimes you have to have a different mode.
Which
And
Michigan had that mode.
I don't think the Huskies offense has that other mode yet, and they should be able to with this offensive line and this running back core. But like that's just
What about
he's
this offensive line, though? Because there's a lot of injuries. We're running out of time here. We got to talk about the Seahawks, but you know, hopefully they will get Carver Willis back for the Illinois game. But without him, it has been a bit of a struggle, I would say.
I think DeMond made one really bad play. And it screwed them on the game. I mean, like, we literally were talking. This is 2 minutes and 9 seconds left in the third quarter. Michigan punts the ball on a fourth and probably should have been challenged. And they punted the ball. That is the game. That should, with 17 minutes left, that should have been end of ball game. Huskies come down, score a touchdown, and then Michigan is never able to get back on it. And DeMond made a really bad play. They go and score a touchdown right after, and then it was over. So the third interception obviously was like just should have been caught. Devon was just throwing it up. But like the second interception was the, they weren't on the same page. Maybe you could blame Damon, but ultimately the entire fucking game came down to that one play. Sharon Moore lost this game for Michigan, in my opinion.
Is that
And
similar to how the Huskies, the Seahawks won against Tampa Bay?
absolutely they did.
All right,
Good
that's our
W.
transition. We have 8 minutes. Seahawks. We haven't talked about their last three games here, dating, and I have not like actually been able to like watch an entire Seahawks game. Not that I did with this game that whatever result just happened, because it happened opposite the Mariners, but haven't been able to just sit down and watch a game for since the Saints game. So it's been a minute.
8.6 yards per play. That's it. That's all I care about. I don't
Typical
give a fuck
game.
whether win or lose. It doesn't matter to me. Sam Darnold should be borderline in conversation for MVP candidates. Like the wrong MVP candidate came out of this game. That's what I'll say. And it's look, they won. Great. Good for them. And Darnold also threw a bad pick in this one. But I'm like, we figured it out, y'all. We have the quarterback of the future. Right here in Seattle, and he's not that old. Like the person who should be taking a victory lap is John Schneider right now. John Schneider should be going through and retweeting posts complaining about the team choosing Darnold over Geno Smith, which he would do if he was John Elway. But like those 8.6 yards per play against Tampa, I left that game and headed to the Mariners game, and I was like, we're the best team in the NFL. Like Baker did all that with.
Sam Darnold's behind Michael Penix Jr. in. Oh no, he's ahead of
And
him.
what?
I misread it.
In what possible metric are we looking at?
He's behind Lamar Jackson in MVP odds.
Oh, an MVP odds. Okay.
Which is funny.
I was like, there couldn't be. Darnold didn't even get sacked. Like people were so concerned about the idea that Darnold like can't move in the pocket. It's gonna get sacked all the time. Zero sacks in the game. He just played a like near flawless game against Tampa Bay. And I thought Clint called a quite good game. Like I literally left this one just being like, well, that team's unstoppable, even though they lost. And it's like Baker did that against you could go Nehemiah Thomas in the secondary.
It was Nehemiah Pritchett.
Or sorry, Nehemiah Thomas. Nehemiah Pritchett,
You might be thinking of Drake
Pritchett.
Thomas, who is the
No, I
greatest middle
love Drake
linebacker.
Thomas. But like Ty Okada, like the defense was there's a little bit too much Tyrese Knight, if you ask me. Like, and Reek was out for the end of the game. Like, there was just nobody left. And it's like, good for you, Baker. Nice W. But ultimately, the Seahawks should have left that game feeling better than the Buccaneers did.
Also, is Baker? Oh yeah, he's plus 375. Wow. Well, that will look either good or bad after their game that starts in about an hour here against the Lions. The Seahawks were only 3.5 point favorites against the Texans. That's kind of shocking to me. We'll
I
see
mean,
how
they did
that
lose.
ages.
Oh, against the Texans, yes. And then just went to Jacksonville and had a pretty casual just beat down of the Jaguars.
The Jaguars, I hate to point this out, might not be good.
Yeah. But like the 6.4 yards per play to four, I was like, yeah, I don't know. The Jags kept it relatively close in the end, but it never felt scary. There was no moment where I was concerned about this one. And that's the kind of team that the Seahawks team is. I feel great about where the Seahawks are at.
You either did or continued to, or didn't continue to. What else should we talk about in the 4 minutes we have here before your call?
Well, how was Spain?
We went to San Sebastian before Barcelona. Really loved that on the coast. Beautiful, amazing food. Like the most Michelin. We didn't go to any Michelin starred restaurants, but like the most Michelin stars per capita of anywhere in the world. And it was great learning about Basque culture and cuisine in that one. So the sports related thing that we did was we went to the French national team against Azerbaijan on the last night that we were in Paris, the same night as ALDS Game 5 and Seahawks Rutgers. And I will say, so we went to see the Italian national team because we keep taking these trips during international breaks. We saw the Italian national team play Belgium the year before, and I was like pretty disappointed by the atmosphere. It just felt like a soccer game. The French, I hate to give them credit. You know that. They delivered on the atmosphere part of it. Enormous supporters section in the end zone, singing the entire time, people regularly waving their flags, getting into the Alleluia Blue chant. So they came through in that regard. And then Kylian Mbappe searched earlier in the week, realized that he had gotten injured while playing for Real Madrid at the previous weekend. And the French media were all like, well, he shouldn't play. We're playing Azerbaijan. We don't need Kylian Mbappe. And he was like, consistent that he wanted to play. Didier Deschamps insisted he was going to play. Not only did he play, not only did he start, he played 80 minutes in this match.
Wow.
And first half, like, France obviously completely dominates possession, has lots of great opportunities, can't convert anything. And then on the edge of halftime, Mbappe just dribbles through the entire defense and ends up scoring. And it was like, that is the moment. That is what I wanted to see. I've never seen Mbappe play in person. So that right there was it. They then added a second goal after halftime. And then we left trying to get back to our hotel when Mbappe went down. It was clear that he was going to get subbed off. And then his substitute managed to score immediately afterwards as we were walking out of the stadium. So they won that one 3-0. Qualifying for the World Cup going better for France than it is for Italy, which is headed in almost all certainty to the playoffs for qualifying, where it'll be four teams for one spot.
Sacre bleu. That's a terrible update. You came back and said how much you liked French culture or soccer.
I didn't want to do it. You
Well,
know I didn't want to do it.
I hated every second of it. Okay.
So, well, there you go. Well, on that
Building up
note,
to building up, that's it. Thanks for
thanks for
listening.
listening.
We're not doing rundown. This is all we're doing.
I thought we didn't have time.
We
We're
really
not
don't. No, I.
doing rundown down post game. We're going to be experiencing the emotions
Okay.
that we have
Post
just
game,
talked about.
we do
Maybe
emotion.
we'll do a third pod later in the week to do rundown and preview the football games at the weekend.
Also, don't we have to do the NBA players to watch like
We
Thursday night?
do
Or
have to do that as well. Yes, I
I
have
want to
to
hear about your
come up with a
simulation
list.
too. It's
All
called life.
right.
but.
If only life could be coded in R. I don't know if I would want that actually.
I was pretty fascinated. I want to hear about how the Blazers do doing that one.
Okay.
You have your list of 10 players to watch, though.
No, I'll have to come up with it.
Okay.
Maybe while I'm watching some games.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.